Ladies and gentlemen, fresh off unfortunate outing last night, it's Browner and Lawhead. It's Padres. It's Padres versus not Indians on the Mightier 1090 ESPN with none other than me and Jason Lawhead, the man in the building last night. What's going on, Jason? How are you?
Good, man. You know, I mean, hey, look, I pull for the Padres, man, when I'm here, and I always have had a fondness since I've moved here, but I will always be a Cleveland guy when it comes to my team. So last night was a lot of fun. I got to join up with a couple of high school buddies that I've known for a long time. One guy lives in LA, another guy's a firefighter down here in Vista, and then another friend joined us. So it was awesome, dude, especially after what I talked about yesterday. We all knew Adrian, and so we took it maybe a little extra. I think we over-toasted too many times, but it was a lot of fun. We actually jumped the train down and then met Jerry coming down, and he's got a room, and we went to places before. We were down there early enough to go to places before and places after and get home safe. But
so tell me this, sir.
Yeah, but a great atmosphere in the building, though. I will say this, you know, Padres fans
were there. Hold on. Okay. Why does this look like Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch?
Because we were in high school when that band was probably big. That's why.
Because you got one guy hat backwards, one guy doing the point. Like, yep. It's an interesting mix you got there, buddy.
Yeah. Well, the guy in the back is not from our high school, but he's a good friend. You know, first responder.
So
I had a good friend with my firefighter buddy, who was on my if you're looking at the picture to the left, but we just had a good time, man. We hit like a couple of little dive bars around before. We hit La Puerta after, and you know, it was a good atmosphere in the stadium.
La Puerta can get jumping.
Oh, La Puerta was jumping. La Puerta was jumping. I could have stayed at La Puerta. Other people have to get up in the morning. But I could have stayed at La Puerta. But, yeah. And then, we just Ubered it back up this way. And it was a fun night. Heck, I didn't get home probably until almost 1 a.m.
Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I was out with the guys until 1 a.m. It would have to be like a Vegas with some comics over a course of a week, and that hasn't happened since pre me probably getting married.
The question I always ask people is this: take out Vegas, because everybody I was out to 4 a.m.
sure. Take out Vegas. Fair, right? Exactly.
Right. Well, if you're not out after 1 o'clock at Vegas, you should go home.
Right. Exactly.
if you are, when was the last time you were out past 1 a.m. non-Vegas?
Well, I'll tell you, that's hard to come up with. I mean, that's really hard to come up with. I mean, even through comedy, right? Like, no. Like, it would have to be sometime before.
Like, what age? What age, you would say?
I mean, it'd have to be. I'm sure it was sometime in the last handful of years, probably as I got more serious with my wife, those days started. So I would probably say early 40s, mid 40s. Yeah. And now I'm going to be 50 in October. So it's been a like to be out that late and just being like, went from one bar and, you know, just having drinks and just having laughs and just, you know, because then you're talking to people, right? Because I'm wearing Cleveland stuff. They're wearing Cleveland stuff. There was a lot of Cleveland being represented around the streets and before the game and early on and through the concourses. Hey, Padre fans were cool as heck. And there was always obviously Padre fans and jerseys all around at the different bars. So it was kind of fun. There was band. Hey, what's up? You know, you'd walk in a place, order a drink, and for a few minutes, you know, there'd be that kind of stuff going on or along the street side. And so, like, yeah, I felt so young because that was the kind of stuff I was doing maybe on a regular basis back at the old Cleveland Stadium in my 20s, you know, at the Jake when we had the Bell and Ramirez days, and that was always fun. You were out late. You were there when the lights were coming on in the bar. You know, I can't remember. The last time in the, I probably was the guy that turned the lights on in the bar. The last time I was in the bar when the lights came on, but it was so fun, man. And then, like, obviously, just it was like perfect timing for everything else that was kind of going on, and all those guys, you know, at least the two guys I went to high school with knew Adrian really well, and we've all known each other, and you know, football, baseball, basketball, everybody played a variety of either one or two or three of the sports, so. Yeah, man, it made for a special night, and the tribe coming home with that kind of a win was fun. And the Padre fans, hey, man, they were enthusiastic. They stayed there. They supported the team through the ninth. It just didn't go the Pod's way, but, they're going to play next year. The schedule's already out, and with a new thing going on with the schedule here, Cleveland's going to be back in June for three games next year. So, I've already texted Bill Hagan. I've locked him in and, I can't wait to go back and, hopefully both teams are defending, you know, World Series matchup. That would be fun, right? If the Padres were looking for revenge next year, on the Guardians after losing the World Series to them, that would be cool.
So yesterday's game left a very weird feeling for me. And it wasn't because of what happened per se with the loss. There were so many things surrounding yesterday's game because we didn't get a chance to talk about this on yesterday's show. The Tatis press conference.
Right.
Which, well, I'm going to hit this point and then we'll jump backwards and do a brief conversation about the press conference. The Major League Baseball needs to do something about umpires. Now, the Padres didn't lose this game because of this call. But because of this call, it got a lot of people in a position of going, what's happening here? Because this particular play is egregious. Like, this is not a strike. That's not a strike. It's not a strike. If you're there at the game, and I'm doing a replay right now. So this
That's
pitch.
Low. Wow. Yeah. So we were up on that third base side. They don't show that replay because of the umps. And so we saw the argument and everything, but I didn't realize, wow, that was
upon
that
review,
low off the plate and just way out of the strike zone.
They measured. It was 4 inches off the plate.
Wow.
4 inches. Not one. Not as the great LeBron James one or Chris Bosh and LeBron, not one, not two, not three, 4 inches off the plate. Mm-hmm. Now, for 4 inches, for some people, that's the world. So you got to know, 4 inches is a lot, baby. So the idea that the ump, after making the mistake, then right, throws a guy out going, that's not a strike, and being pissed about it because it wasn't. In a pivotal game, where I think at that point in time it was
close,
a
game,
run
game, you know, yeah,
you are
down to the last out. It was a close game.
You're going. Every person, Ed, comes up to the bat with someone on base. It's the potential winning run at the plate. That's how close that game was. And for you to punch a guy out and then throw a guy out on a mistake that you made, like, come on, man, like this. And when you were there, the punch out and the throw out. You probably,
yeah, well,
like,
from our view, it
deal?
Doesn't look like a
and
bad pitch,
it,
right? I mean, location-wise, as far as, you know, wildness, it's appearing to head to the strike zone. But then when
right,
you see it and you see how far off and low off the plate it is, and you can't give up that much plate and then stick up for yourself. Like, it's one thing if you're going to give up, like you said, 1 inch, two, not two, not three. Like, you know, if you're going to be a guy that is known to be like, this guy's going to give an inch and a half off the plate here on certain, like, but you can't give up that much. Because now that with that replay, it's like, well, how do you go back? Like, how do you not just argue that is not, if you're the next, now, if you're the Padres and you throw one of those pitches, how are you not going to sit there and stomp your feet and go, why is that not a strike?
Right. And so and later in the same inning, the Padres get men on first and second. And Trent Grisham, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, got a similar strike called on him, out, more up and outside. But nevertheless, It's the same thing. And so we have the technology. And I'm going to pound this drum until they fix this, because I don't believe their human error to this degree should be a part of baseball. I don't care who it hurts. At some point, if you have the technology on the screen every single game, you have to, at some point, as a sport, embrace it. If the fans at home can see something that egregious, as Major League Baseball, you're just going to keep being like, human error. Like, the point of technology is to get rid of human error where you can.
Well, you know, it's interesting, the umpires, long before we had 70 cameras on the field and even the thought that they would even go to replay in baseball, you know, the umpires union really locked down hard long ago that they put that in there. They put making a mistake, don't worry about it. Like, and when they said, the minute you argue balls and strikes from anywhere, at the plate, in the box, from the dugout, from the third base coaching box, you're gone. Like that. So that was this concrete rule they put in, you know, a long time ago, and they've had that rule. It's the don't even huff about a strike or a ball, because the minute you argue it, all you can do is like, was that a ball or was that on the corner? Yes, it was on the corner, and shut up and don't ask me another thing. Like, it's that buttoned up that's their out. So their out is blow a call like that, not ever have to apologize for it or own up for it. And the minute you peacock your chest out to say something, you're gone. You're gone.
So human emotion.
It's in the book for them, and they get that out. Bye.
We need to get the idea also that you can't play baseball without umpires, because I get that they have a contract, and this contract is whatever. The idea that you can't play without them, this is the only sport, by the way, that you can play without them. Like, you can do it 100%. You
would need at least one out there to be able to answer the timeout on the field. If a pitcher or some, you know, you would at least have to have a almost like a chair umpire in tennis, in the sense that, you know, we see the ball where it goes in between the lines. Technology can measure whether that thing, you know, looped in foul or got in and hugged.
Fair or foul. Yep. So this idea that we can't, people are always slow with things in baseball. The idea that you can't is silly, because clearly you can. There is technology in tennis has proven you don't need four or five umpires. You need two, maybe three, but you don't need as many as they have, especially you damn sure don't need one behind the plate for balls and strikes. So that's just every game. You can find a call every game that does that. And if you can legislate that out of the game, you should. And I also believe that it would make better hitting and better pitching, by the way, but that's no here or there. Let's talk about the dark cloud that's over the team. Yesterday, Fernando Tatis Jr. held a pointless press conference, in my opinion, of course, to attempt to went over fans who were going to forgive him anyway and make people who were never going to forgive him annoyed with the fact that he's even still publicly out here communicating about ringworm cream. The problem with him still being able or still trying to, publicly apologize is you're not changing the story. So unless you want to honestly say what happened, what are we talking about here? What kind of conversation are we having? You were on steroids. You got caught. Sit, admit it, do your games, come back, and that be it. But for you to still be at a press conference, still saying it was ringworm cream, any contrition you show to me is false. It just is, because you're still hiding behind the original lie, it was ringworm cream.
Yeah, I mean, why even have the press conference at the end of the day? I think public sentiment.
Why?
It was like too late for that. Like the sentiment, the public sentiment, how we're looking at it, how everybody's looking at it. If you're a diehard Padre fan, if you're a casual Padre fan, if you're just a baseball fan that is following the story, like, you know, The problem is from our from that what I just mentioned, that standpoint, like I said, that sentiment is cemented. we kind of all have that like feeling, no matter how much it wounds or it doesn't wound. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's still a story, and they feel like they got to come out because the Padres haven't lit the world on fire since the trade and since this news of the suspension, which comes right on the heels. So, you know, when you're just grinding out a split with the Nationals, you're losing to the Diamondbacks in this whole experiment, your closer's falling apart, and you're moving him up into a different role to see if things can work. This story, them 80 games start really getting like a bigger, it becomes a bigger chunk of games because it's right in front of you. And now there's no running away and hiding from that. So, but that's what they're just trying to do. They're just trying to be like, we're sorry, you know, hopefully the team does well and Fernando can't wait to come back. But you know, these are the things that happen. And it's just like, well, you're just saying that in a more cowering sense at this point. And the same thing over and over. And the team's got a job to do and you're just not around to do it. So just, you know, sit back and hope that they can find something and put it together and make that 80 games feel less. Cause right now it feels like a lot because the world is not being set on fire. They're getting farther and farther away from the Dodgers, even though that's not the goal. It just shows you that it's like, wait, you're supposed to be here to help us slay the Dodgers, or at least, you know, beat teams like the Nationals four straight. Like, what is happening? Right. Why are you talking again?
Every time he either speaks or because of something that he has said or his father has said or some other Dominican player has said in his defense, turns into a question in that clubhouse about him. And the last, and I'm not a big guy about, oh, distractions. But that can be a distraction. I'm not, when football coaches are like, oh, I don't want my guys, this is a distraction. I know professional football players. I know professional athletes. A lot of this stuff is not a distraction. This is a distraction because you were expecting this guy to be here. And instead of being able to worry about what you currently are going through, you are literally answering a question about a guy who cannot contribute. You are answering a question about a guy who won't be here now and for a chunk of next year. So I understand completely why people are looking at this as a get away, go as far away as you can until the season is over. Let us kind of get what we have together.
You're not changing any minds. You didn't win over any teammates that already didn't feel right. Good about you. You here's what you did. You had pissed the yes men say yes louder for you. And it, like I said, the sentiment's already been there. And the people that were like, man, what a disappointment, still feel the same. It didn't do anything to move any needle other than the yes men are still your yes men. And the people that doubted you, you didn't win over a teammate that was like, oh, shucks, man, I was really down on Fernando, but I'll tell you, he's the best. You know, like the guys that were like, man, screw this dude. Like, whatever. We're trying to win games with who we got. Like, those guys still feel that way. That's what I mean.
So, I mean, I still feel that way. But fortunately for me, I get to go and I get to connect with fans. I get to connect with the energy of the people because this Saturday, I, along with Scott Kaplan, the Pod Squad, the Swinging Friar, will be at San Diego Lexus handing out hats and auctioning off. Obviously, you don't have to pay to get into the raffle, but game-worn material by Will Myers, game-worn material by Manny Machado. Fun, all types of refreshments and food for people to come down and check it out. So if you're in the area or you got nothing to do with your kids on Saturday, and trust me, there's always something that you need to do with your kids to get them out of the house on the weekend, this is a perfect opportunity to do so. If you're a Padre fan or if you're not a Padre fan, this is a great opportunity to come out and get your kids around some really fun,
cool,
really
man.
Positive
energy. You guys should do. You should do an event where you give away, just as a goof, you give away ringworm cream. Just some ringworm cream. Just like, hey, yeah, first 20 in, just in case you ever get it, you'll have it in the medicine cabinet.
For Halloween, how many people are going to be ringworm?
Just a bunch of kids coming to your door dressed as a tube of ringworm cream.
Like certain sometimes certain costumes are popular in certain areas and they don't make any sense anywhere else. Here, when kids start showing up in ringworm costumes,
if finally the ringworm, a ringworm cream, a guy in like a tube of ringworm cream that was like humanized, gave a press conference behind a podium about this whole thing, and he was just like, "Look, you know, not my fault. Under the bus here. Look, I
told them what I was.
Simple topical solution helped to get people that you know been exposed to a bacteria. Yeah, just something like matter of fact. Like he's just trying to like you know."
I don't like the fact that they're dragging me through the mud.
Legal action. I just want to go on about defamation of character.
We might be working on a really funny skit, Brownell. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. What's up, everybody? Back like we never left. Mightier 1090, ESPN, Browner and Lawhead. Bringing you entertainment, fun, laughs, ringworm press conferences, and anything else you can imagine on a Wednesday or Friday. Because of those of you who do know, we are Brown and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN, Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Everything that you've heard here, comical or not, you can hear again on the iTunes podcast store and on YouTube under the Kaplan and Crew logo. We are having some fun with the Tatis situation. Jason was down at the game last night. If you missed the first half of the show, we talked about umps needing to be robots from now on. We also talked about Jason and three of his friends, a.k.a. Jason and the Funky Bunch, heading down to Petco to watch the Not Indians beat the Padres last night. We started breaking down the divisions because we're getting closer and closer to football. Today on Kaplan and Crew, they say, you know, football has officially started because a Charger player is injured. And that being J.C. Jackson out 2 to 4 weeks with apparently an ankle surgery that was performed in New York. So no Charger doctors did it. So it might turn out sufficient and proper. But we were doing per division ranks. We did the AFC West, AFC East, AFC South. Now we're going to move over to the NFC. And because I am a lifelong Bears fan and my sister team happened to be the Chargers, we're going to do the NFC North. Jason is a native of the Midwest, so he knows a lot about the Bears, the Packers, the Lions, and the Vikings, even though he roots for the Browns. If you have been watching Hard Knocks, it's really funny that through Hard Knocks, we always get to know players who won't be on the team. And with the Detroit Lions, it's hard to tell because they're all terrible. Whether it be the coach or the guy they're going to cut, whether it be guy 53 or guy 1, there isn't much of a difference when it comes to the Detroit Lions. And so with that being said, I'll start off our conversation about the NFC North with the Detroit Lions. Have you seen them on Hard Knocks, Jason? And what do you think?
You know what I think? I think it debunked probably a preconceived notion I had, what I thought it would look like, what all things – you know, knowing Campbell from last year and some of the just, you know, zaniness. and then just...
That's a good word to describe and what then, he does, zany.
You know, just having that preconceived notion of knowing, you know, how bad Detroit's been for so many years and, you know, the fact that it had to have been even a colder offseason when they see a guy like Stafford go in a Super Bowl and just to have... So, I think... From all the Hard Knocks that I've watched that I can remember from the different franchises that have been postered, I'm actually a little impressed with what's happening in Detroit to a degree, or at least surprised to see what I didn't think I'd see, which is something that some unity, I think that kind of comes through. There's some belief and some, you know, I know the cameras are on, but I would say that, you know, there's a humble cockiness to what they're trying to portray as a team under Campbell and where they're trying to go. And so I'm curious to see how they play, you know, the season this year. Because there were some flashes of like, the Lions, did you see what the Lions did today? And, you know, even though they were such a laughing stock at the start and throughout a lot of the season, there was a couple of points. So maybe that's carried over. So I'm curious to see how they compete in that division with some, maybe some question marks. At least, you know, Green Bay, obviously a favorite, but the other three slots could be interesting. Vikings will, you know, have some experience and probably, you know, be a little, you know, maybe out of the gate, a little bit more, you know, organized to go out and play than the Bears and the Lions. Maybe those two teams may have to, you know, find their identities a little bit more in year two of what they're trying to do with Fields and the Campbell experience post Stafford. So it'll be interesting. But I'm a little impressed, actually.
Well, it's funny to me about what we are noticing on Hard Knocks. And I can't help but be 100% honest about this. I like what I'm seeing. All this explains to me is they care. Right. And they just don't have any talent. That's the one thing I've taken away from about, well, I also don't think Dan Campbell is a head coach. But
you think it's a shadow government there?
What they're trying to... No. He is quote
right,
unquote
that's what
the head
I mean.
Coach.
So you think they're running a shadow government through him as the head coach?
They could be, because to me, he strikes me as a strength and conditioning coach. He's got all the characteristics of a strength and conditioning coach. He's large. He's yacked up. He's out of his mind crazy. He just so happens to be in charge of the team. The butt cheeks and three fingers or four toes or all that is, if you've ever played a collegiate sport, that guy is the physical trainer on every team.
Yeah.
That's not point. The head coach. I like how hard their players will run through a wall for him, but you can only run through so many walls before your body taps out. It's about strategy. And Dan Campbell and Dan Campbell's coaching staff, and what I've seen on Hard Knocks, doesn't strike me as somebody who's going to reinvent the wheel. They're not going to show you a new way of playing football. Once the brutality of what they do doesn't work against you, they don't have a counterpunch. And that's one of the things I found interesting about watching Hard Knocks this year. As a member of the division, I've seen them twice, and both times they look like they did not have anything in the toolbox to combat even the Chicago Bears. So I don't imagine with a new offensive coordinator, because Anthony Lynn had the responsibilities taken from him last year midway through the season and given to strength and conditioning / head coach Dan Campbell, I don't see them being any better than they were last year. So I think they're going to be dead last in the division. I think the Chicago Bears would be next to last, but I don't think the Bears are going to be as bad as many people think they are. I think Matt Eberflus has done a good job with the Chicago Bears so far. They look competent, which... They look competent. They look coached. And in comparison to last year, that's an upgrade. So I think the Bears will come in next to last. I think the division will be decided between the Vikings and the Packers, because the Packers have no wide receiving core. They have a great defense. They have no wide receiving core. And the Vikings have a new head coach, but they have all their parts back. So I don't know between the two which one has the right formula, because I think a new offense is good for 8 games. I think Kevin O'Connell's offense will be great for 8 games. After that, people have tape on it. Now you have to figure out a way to respond and alter when guys start attacking you. So when we're looking at this division, who do you think is the best coach in it? LaFleur?
Campbell. No. whoever's controlling Campbell. Yeah.
Dan Campbell or Matt Eberflus.
Yeah.
Whoever's Geppetto-ing
him. I have to give
him.
It to LaFleur, just at the outset to come in. And it's still, I know you have Aaron Rodgers and you've got Davante Adams and you've got the Green Bay Packer organization. Well, I'm saying at when he came in.
Not anymore.
I'm saying, you got the Green Bay Packer organization.
Right.
Is who you're going to work for. It makes those things a lot easier than when you're a Dan Campbell, even if, you weren't just a strength and conditioning coach. Like you said, because talent and, just organization and preparation is half the battle. So even though he's had that, he's done well, he's still got to go in there and you still got to deliver some goods there. And in my opinion, they've fallen short in the last couple of years due to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had, you know, first and goal, his team intercepted Tom Brady three times. Yeah. First and goal to go win it in his own backyard against Brady. And he couldn't, you know, he went four downs and out and couldn't close out the game. And then, you know, San Francisco, you know, I mean, he can't get a touchdown. He can't, you know, he can't put the ball in. They had a running touchdown early, but he never got in the end zone again. So I don't think that's LaFleur's fault. But with that being said, I don't think any of these guys in their rearview mirror, you know, by any stretch of imagination. I don't think he's looking back very far at, you know, Eberflus, all these other guys that you could say, well, Campbell, maybe we'll see. And that's what, you know, Campbell will see. And look, I'm with you. Like, I think that Minnesota will be there ready to win that division if this Green Bay thing doesn't work out, if things just start to falter, if Rodgers shows a little bit of his age, if other guys don't step up, if you know, pieces and parts don't get rolling like they usually do for them, it'll be Minnesota that's there ready to win the division. And can Chicago play above themselves long enough? And when you talk about talent, you're right. You know, it's funny because when you look at an NFL season, even going to 17 games, even at 16 games, you know, you think about that in baseball, that's nothing. You can't even test a team really over 16 games. NBA basketball, it's like, oh my God, 16 games, right. Yeah, that's nothing either. But in football, 16, 17 is a lot of football games. When you don't have talent that catches up to you, like you said, that just, it gets long. It feels like 162 games when you don't have talent at that level. And every Sunday feels like, oh gosh, I hope we don't get our head taken off today. I hope that these guys coming in, you know, slip up. I hope they're looking past us and we can even just compete, because I think that's kind of where the Lions have to come from. I mean, that's their next, right? Like kind of how the Browns grew over their 0-16, 1-15 year. This has to be something for the Lions. This has to be 7-10 and feel good about it, or 8-9, because if it isn't, then Hard Knocks is, you're right, it's just right back to square one and the cameras are off next year. And what are you going to do
on the roster? I think the Green Bay Packers have the best defense. I think the Vikings have the best offense. I think the Packers have the best quarterback. I think the Vikings have the best running back. I think the surprise in the division will be whatever the Chicago Bears do in a positive way. Because if they suck, no one expected them to be great. But if they are good, I think they will be the surprise in the division, because I think they're going to run the football more, which should make it easier on the offensive line. I think Justin Fields has better skill position players than people are giving him credit for. And I think if he's able to show that, I think that's going to be a world of difference when it comes to these games, these interdivision games. Because Chicago, cold, running the football, that's a difficult recipe to deal with. What Matt Nagy was doing, you could have defended that at any point in time, in any point in history, in any weather condition. So I think they're going to try to use some of the original built-in advantages for the Chicago Bears with the Chicago Bears. I have no faith in the Lions. I have very little faith in the Bears because I'm too close to it. I have a tiny amount of hope for Minnesota because of what I think they can do with Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, and what they have. But
you said something about cold weather. The Bears' goal, in my opinion, should be, let's get to the cold weather, a game above 500. If we can get to cold weather, right? No, when those games are there, which is when you look at it, you start looking at, you know, the sun goes, the clock goes back in the first week in November. That's when it starts really getting cold and it starts setting in. So September 6th, 7th, 8th, from that point on, there's a lot of season to play. And in my opinion, their goal should be, look, let's get ourselves into that position and then get ourselves, our goal should be, let's be ready to be a wild card. Let's assume Green Bay is going to go 13-3. Let's assume Green Bay is going 13-3. And
right.
And we can be, you know, a
hopefully
Vikings,
we can be
you know,
one of those three
in the wings and find out if our 10-7 or 11-6 shakes out and gets us to a playoff game, which good chances are it will, you know, with the extra team and the extra game. 10-7 looks great. And then I think Chicago, as you say, they can play into their hand a little bit. They get into cold weather because you look at their schedule. I mean, it's not frightening. They've got, you know, San Francisco at home on week one, at Green Bay, the Texans, the Giants, Vikings, Washington, you know, New England. These aren't teams, Dallas, I mean, Miami, Detroit, Atlanta. And then that's when, you know, Miami, Detroit, Atlanta, Jets in a row is when the cold weather sets in. So these aren't like, oh, my God, so scary. There's, you know, Tom Brady's not on the schedule. They don't get the Buffalo till way late in the season. To me, it's the kind of schedule that they should have a big goal to get to the wild card this year.
Something like super local here. And some people, this may be out of the context of what people want to hear, but this concerns CIF. It concerns some of y'all kids. Ron Nocetti, I don't know if this is the correct spelling, N-O-C-E-T-T-I. I mean, I'm on the website. He's the executive director at the CIF OFITLA of the state, not like some regional portion of it, of the state. He came out yesterday and said that no CIF athlete is eligible for NIL deals. So I have an interesting question for Mr. Executive Director of CIF. You mean to tell me that if there's a five, let's say Reggie Bush is at Helix. Nike comes to Reggie Bush, a poor kid living in the southeast of San Diego, and wants to give him $1 million to be in a Nike commercial as a high school athlete. You're going to deem him and his school ineligible because Nike wanted to cut him a check because he's going to get that money now at the college level anyway? If you saw Reggie Bush in high school and NIL existed, Reggie Bush would have been a millionaire before he put a USC helmet on. It was that dynamic. And so if you're going to tell me that a child trying to help his family through his talent cannot accept an NIL deal. So now you're going to, so you also must mean that high school kids can't work jobs. High school kids can't use any of their talents to be a pianist or an actor, a bus driver, you name it. You name it. Because what a CIF athlete who is able to score an NIL deal is a athlete using their talent for financial gain, which is what you're doing, sir, in your job. You're using your college education and your life experience in your position of where you work. So why is that any different for these kids if someone wants to cut them a check? You old man, stop messing things up for kids. Old people, stop ruining things for kids. That is my message.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just being brought up to speed on this decision. And for what it's worth, I would say, I guess the only jurisdiction that the CIF could kind of maybe, I just don't know how this doesn't become a court battle, first off, right? I don't know how this doesn't become a court battle for the player and the family involved who wants to get this deal, who wants an NIL deal to represent them. And as long as all that's just legal with him either being a minor and his parents getting into whatever they need to talk about to Nike or, you know, whoever it is, Under Armour, whoever may come calling for another great Reggie Bush type athlete, is that, as long as that's all set up, I just don't understand how. Now, the only jurisdiction I would maybe say that the CIF can encroach is saying that, Reggie Bush Jr., we can't say that you can't take an NIL deal from Nike. We can't say that at all. You're still eligible to play for Helix every Friday night and every two nights a week on the basketball court, and if that's the sport. But what we can say is you cannot wear what they're paying you to wear in our sanctioned games, in our gymnasium. We're not going to punish your team or punish you or make you ineligible or make your team forfeit teams unless you're wearing a Wilson headband and you're wearing the apparel that is, you know, either going to be, people are going to either, they're going to be in there with a cell phone footage of you dunking, and they're going to be using that as their reels and streams. So I guess still old man stuff possibly, but if the CIF did have anything to stand on, at least jurisdiction, you know, for me to go, hey, listen, or we need that company to cut us a nice check so we can get improve things. And if they're going to use CIF sanctioned games in our gymnasiums, and they want to the NIL splashed all over you and online and on, you know, then cut us into the part of the deal, which these big companies, you know, probably could work some type of satisfaction. But to make a kid ineligible, to say like, hey, this is the path we've crossed now. You know, the courts have said NIL deals for amateur, like this can happen.
Quoting an LA Times writer, Eric Sonderin, Ron Nocetti, director of CIF, makes it clear our schools cannot participate in NIL deals on behalf of their student athletes. We may consider schools trying to do NIL deals with students under influence. Schools cannot be affiliated or anyone associated with school. It doesn't.
Well, I know this as a basketball official, right? I know that one of the. Okay.
10 seconds.
As a basketball official, I know that when we look at uniforms and everything, nobody can have anything that says anything. They can't have the logo showing. They can't have Under Armour headband. They got to flip it back to a solid black or whatever. And so there's matching things, and there's, you can't have a corporate name showing. And that's been a rule ever since I've ever reffed here in California. Peace.
That's dumb. I'll see you.